Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld from Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, my guest is Kenneth Walsh, author of Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful, and also the blogger behind Kenneth in the 212. Good evening. Hey, Kenneth, what's going on?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Great, great. So you're in the big city, New York City tonight. What's hot there tonight? What is the hottest thing? If I landed in New York City right now, what should I do on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock?
Oh, you're asking the wrong person. I guess I would say the Brussels sprouts at Westville are about the hottest thing in town.
I love roasted Brussels sprouts. I'm one of those weird people.
Yeah, okay. Me too. And I just discovered them in my 40s, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was pretty late when I discovered him, too. That's great. Anyway, as many of you know, or some of you may not know, Kenneth is the author and creator of the famous blog, Kenneth in the 212, living in New York City, so you don't have to, and also has recently written a book, partially autobiographical, but hilarious, called Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful. Is it partially autobiographical or all autobiographical? Did you make any of that up?
No, it's all real.
It's all real. Oh, my God, you've had a busy life. Girl, you must be worn out. I was tired reading it. It's done very well.
I don't know if that's a compliment, but okay.
Of course it is. You know, when we get old, all we're going to have are our memories, honey, right?
Okay, well, in that case, if it was exhilarating or got you out of the house mentally, then that's good.
Yeah, that's good. That's great. So let's get started first with the blog. When did you start, Kenneth, in the 212?
It started in 2005, 8 years ago.
Uh-huh. Wow. It's kind of early in the thing. And was it always a sponsored blog, or did you start it with your own money at the beginning?
Was it always a what kind of blog?
Do you have sponsors on your blog?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, okay.
When you start out, nobody wants to put an ad on your blog. So it was strictly done. I had gone to the U.S. Open, as I do every year, because I'm a big tennis fan.
Uh-huh.
And I came home and I'd seen this great match, and I was going to write a mass email to my tennis friends and family and tell them about the fun night Michael and I had.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, I thought, well, what could I do to really bring it alive and put the photos and, you know, kind of tell a story and get it all together? And I'd recently heard about blogging while editing some stories for the New York Times circuit section, which is their kind of tech section.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I just Googled or whatever it was at the time, blogs, and came across the blogger site and started it up that night thinking I would never use it again. Sent out the link to my friends and family, and one thing led to another, and now I have like 20,000 posts on there.
Wow, that is amazing. That is great for a blog. It really is.
Crazy.
And so what would you say in a couple of sentences is the theme or the thrust of your blog?
It was always meant to be sort of an archive of things that I like. I started out, you know, even as a child, I was really into making lists. I have, like, a very chronological mind, and I like to remember the order in which things happen. And people think it's really weird how I can remember what year things happened to them that they can't, because it's all kind of a blur to a normal person. But I've always kind of had this chronological way of looking at things, and that's exactly what blogging is all about, because each post, you know, adds on to the next or tells a story, and it's like a diary. So I was kind of doing a lot of tennis, a lot of 80s music, which I, you know, I'm a big fan of. Mm-hmm. And for a little while, I kind of felt like I needed to start covering everything of importance to the gay community. I just, you know, once I started having readers, I felt like a responsibility to do more.
Right, right.
But then it became kind of a burden, and I realized, you know, there are already people like Andy Toll and Joe My God and people who really are on top of all that stuff that have it covered, and I just sort of went back to doing it as a, you know, way for me to express myself. And I'd write little short stories about things that happened to me as a child, and which is sort of what led to the book.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. Very, very, very interesting. I know Andy and I know Joe, and you're completely different. All three of you are completely different people, and there are other bloggers out there, some sponsored, yeah. Some not, with incredible amounts of following. It seems like, and it's not even a generational thing. It goes across all generations that the gay community is a very hooked up. I mean, not in that sense, but I mean, really hooked up to technology and blogging and stuff. It seems like so much goes on with social media in our community, and it's great. I love it. Okay, the book. All right, the book takes us all over the country, back and forth. I got dizzy. I was going to get a map because I try to. I'm very chronological. I told you earlier. My listeners all know this. So I'm a retired dentist, and everything has to be like in its little place. And you know, I'm trying to figure out where you were living and where you were moving. And I have these, little index cards all over.
Okay.
So I'm trying to, and you have really lived everywhere. How was it always
been? I wonder if my agent is listening right now, because he actually pitched and sold the book under the title "I'm from Everywhere" because he thought that was sort of the takeaway from the book.
That mine too.
He liked that.
That was
better.
Mine. Yeah. Well, that was my takeaway too. I said, "Where is he from? You know, what is this guy? You know?" And you know, of course, and I hear you now. You have no accent. You have no Midwestern accent. You have no Southern accent. You have no North Central. Accent. I mean, you certainly don't have a New York accent, so that that's amazing, because I've moved all around the country too, and I'm really good at listening for the nuances. But that's amazing. Yeah, I was really. How is it to be always the new kid on the block? It looks like in your formative years, your adolescent coming out puberty years, you were really popped around a lot. How did that affect you?
Well, I'm sure it hasn't been good, but, you know, I've survived. It was weird because it's not like I didn't want the book to seem that way, and hopefully it didn't to most people. Things mm-hmm. did happen at various points, which I do write about because obviously it stuck with me, but I wasn't mm-hmm. like the consummate picked on kid. It's just,
okay.
You know, when you are new, like I said, when I was being teased, when I was sitting at that new girl, that old girl's desk,
right.
and moving here and there, you know, it's difficult. But that's
right.
That's not really something
right.
I think about too
okay.
much.
Okay. Well, you know, it was normal for you, so you really didn't know anything else, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's great.
Getting back to the accent thing, Michigan is like the worst place to be from as far as an accent, and I can hear one like a mile away.
Me too.
I thank my parents because neither of them is really a Michigander, so I think that's how my brothers and sister and I wound up being spared that curse, because my mom is from Omaha and my dad is from Pennsylvania, so they kind of had their own way of talking.
Right. Oh, yeah. That would be true. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take you back. I loved a couple of chapters. I roared. I'm sure people have told you this, that they just read the thing and then you're sitting at Starbucks or somewhere and I've got on my iPad. I was at the gym and I started like laughing out loud and everyone goes, "What are you doing?"
Really? That's great.
Yeah. And one of them was the KKK story. I don't know why, but that. So could you, without giving too much away, you want to talk about the KKK?
Well, I mean, the idea that, like, an 11-year-old boy would start a babysitting service, well, that alone is probably pretty bizarre.
Right.
But the fact that his parents and no one at the local newspaper would think anything of my calling it that and would run ads with that in, like, big
right.
bold print is...
Yes.
It is pretty hilarious that no one ever said, "This isn't a good idea, kid."
And where were you living? I know.
Didn't care. Or don't start with a K anyway. I should have been reprimanded for that alone.
Right, right. Well, I know, but that's kind of like a artistic license. You know, we all do that. You know, advertise. I know.
It's
an artistic
license to be a white supremacist.
Right, right. Well, at the time, I mean, everything has its everything has its own, you know, place and time, right? In a certain time anyway.
Yeah.
But it was funny, and it really, really was a funny thing. Okay, we're going to get Woody Allen on you now. Let's talk about your mother. She plays a very large part in the book, popping in and out at good times, bad times, and opportune times. Obviously, has she read the book?
She has not.
Okay.
Procrastinating for a really long time, and technically the release date is March 5th, so I'm still holding on to these last few days.
Okay. We have a caller. Let's do a caller, okay?
I have heard so many different things. Like, some people think she'll love it. One sibling thinks it'll be fine. Another one's terrified and thinks I'll never be at a family event again.
Right.
I've tried to be as blunt as I can with her over the course of the last year since we signed the deal. But I'm not entirely sure she knows what's coming.
Right.
But it was definitely written with nothing but love and affection. I certainly, most people seem to think that comes through.
I hope so. Oh, I think it does. I think she's just hilarious. So we have a caller.
Yeah. She's a character. Yeah.
Hi there. Can you hear us? We have a caller, 407? No, we don't. Okay.
Well, like you said.
You have a short attention span. All right. We tried. Okay. So, Molly, and you, first of all, you start out at the beginning of the book with giving her an entire chapter, a great chapter, but then her pop-ups and her one-liners, you have got to just, you know, did you write them down as they were happening?
No, they're really, the whole family sort of throws them out at various stages of their life constantly. They should all be on T-shirts, we've decided. And
right.
Now even people that I work with have started saying some of them, which totally made my day when this woman I work with blurted one out earlier tonight.
She thought
someone was making themselves cough, and she was quick to point that out to me. So,
you're making yourself cough. That's like a whole chapter, and it comes up again. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I didn't have funny parents, so I don't know from this. You know, I had, you know, I didn't have Warren and Judy Cleaver, but I didn't have these, you know, I couldn't quote my mother, you know, it would be like boring. It would be like, what do you want for dinner? Type questions.
My mom would never say that.
Take
what I make and you'll, you know.
Oh no. Short order cooks, three kids. We had three different meals every night. I should write my own book.
Wow.
Anyway, I know. It's insane. All right. So what did you leave out? You know, what did you really want to put in there? Because, you know, everyone has to edit, right?
I mean, I was telling somebody the other day that I was proud of myself for not censoring things. I said a lot of things, personal things, that sometimes I have, like, a panic attack thinking about why did I put that in there, because, you know, now I work with these people, things that your own siblings don't even know about you. But, I mean, there's probably something, but I'm so tapped out right now, I can't even remember what it was. I didn't write a lot about my siblings. This had a lot more to do with myself and my parents, but it's not like I have some big juicy story that I was holding back on. It's just, you know, I think there are some other areas that maybe I didn't explore that I could have, but it just didn't seem to fit the tone of this one.
Well, there could be a sequel.
There definitely
right.
could. I think I have a lot of stuff, you know, that I've worked on my blog since this happened, and other things that I've been writing down. So, no doubt.
All right, good, good deal. Well, we lost our caller. I don't know where he went. I tried twice. I know.
I wonder if that was Florida.
It was a Florida. It was Orlando. Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat. So, we're gonna go on. We have finished your mother. We're going to go on to your love life. Of your many assignations and loves, you treat your exes so much nicer than I would on paper. Why?
Well, you know, the one that I write about, both of them I'm
again?
Still very friendly with.
Is 407 there? Are you somebody there? Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, what's your, this is Nate and Kenneth. Say hello.
Hello.
Hi, my name's Dwight.
Hey, Dwight. Nice to meet you. Do you have a question or comment, Kenneth?
Yeah. I have read the book, and I wanted to ask Kenny or Kenneth what he thinks about first boyfriends. I mean, as far as does he think that all the hopes and dreams that we have when we're growing up and growing up gay, when we finally meet that man or the first boyfriend that we meet, do we transfer everything that we hope for into that relationship? And I mean, in making it doomed to failure to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I don't know that it's typical of everybody, but in my case, definitely. It just mm-hmm. seemed like a huge sigh of relief. This person was someone that, you know, I got along with great. We just connected in every way. I was, you know, proud to bring him around my family. All my friends liked him. So I mm-hmm. just, like, was ready mm-hmm. to settle down and have it be, you know, the rest of my life, or so I thought. But, mm-hmm. you know, that, the reason why I'm not so nasty or bitter about it is even I can say, looking back, it's, you know, it's pretty silly to think that that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And...
Well, you know, what,
the funniest
what about,
part is that, what's that?
Go ahead, Dwight.
I'm sorry, what about, do you think that lesbians have better luck than gay men at first relationships lasting forever?
Well, I don't really approve of that lifestyle, so I don't really know much about that. So, sorry, can't help you there.
Dwight, let me just...
I don't know. I really don't. You know, some people just are nesters. I think if Derek had been more where I was in my life, it's possible. Because actually, his best friend at the time got together with a guy, and they're still together, this uh-huh. couple. I think I might have even mentioned them in there. So it could have gone sure. either way, but Derek was just not the settling down kind of guy back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Dwight, thank you so much for calling.
Good to talk to you, Dwight.
It's good to talk to you too, Kenny.
That was fun. Okay, so, but you know, you really had some assholes for boyfriends. I mean, they did. I mean, and you did treat them very gently, and I wouldn't have done that.
Well, it's funny. Derek is involved with a guy now. I think they've been together a couple of years. They're uh-huh. he's still in Arizona. And when he read the book, he let his boyfriend read it. And I guess when the guy finished reading it, he set it down and turned to him and said, "You're an asshole." So I thought getting his current boyfriend to say that was probably more satisfying than anything I could say about him. So that was pretty
true.
Funny.
You got the last laugh. That's great. I don't even... My present husband, we've been together 12 years, doesn't even know the
yeah.
name of my exes or how many there were. We started with we don't. I don't want to hear about his. He doesn't want to hear about mine. So
that's by design.
It is by design, and it works out so much better. So I have I've kind of lost the memories of them. I have to, like, oh my god, which one was that? Oh, what was his name? I don't even know how to spell it. So actually, you know, in a way, that's, you know, I don't have that. But I'm not a writer. You know, I'm an observer, and so it's a different. I'm in a different little space on that, and I'm also a person who is very into GLBT publishing, and we're going to talk about that next. Your book is through a publisher with a distributor, many books in gaydom right now, and straightdom and gaydom. I can't believe I said that. That's horrible. can't believe what I'm talking about. Are self-published for many reasons. One being that there are very, very, very few publishers left anymore. We've lost three or four big ones, or they've merged, or they've disappeared. And the second is, it's very easy to publish your own book. And trust me, as one of the only outlets for internet radio book reviews, I get literally hundreds of books a month from people that are just god awful. Poorly edited, poorly everything, you know, from the design of the jacket to the misspelling to the bad English, to
wow.
the what in the hell is this book about? I don't know if you've seen any. There's literally hundreds of them coming out every year. They're all on Amazon. Of course, Amazon will put anything up there. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, it used to be we were lamenting all the small bookstores going under because of Barnes & Noble and Borders,
right.
and now we're having
right.
to lament Borders dying, and now all the Barnes & Nobles are closing here in Manhattan. So,
right, right.
It's, I mean, I don't have a problem with shopping online, but they even say that book sales, especially e-book sales, are being hurt by bookstores going under because people do still like to browse. They do still like to look at them.
Sure.
And without that there, they don't buy them anymore. So, it's,
right.
you know, it's not far be it. I mean, it's certainly not Barnes & Noble's place to be open so that people can get ideas on what to buy on Amazon. But
right.
I've always loved bookstores since I was,
so do I.
You know,
yeah.
a child. My stepfather would take us to the library, you know, every Saturday, and it was just a big ritual that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember going to this bookstore by my school in college and finding a used copy of The Joy of Gay Sex, and it was just like the
oh.
greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Right, right.
And, you know, not having that experience, it's sad, but, you know, it'll continue. It just, it will be different, just like it is with record stores and downloading
sure.
music. It's
sure.
going to be a whole different experience, and people like you right. will be that much more important because people will have no other way of, you know, publicizing their title.
Right. Right. Well, and I do think the democratization we're in the growing pains version of it right now with
right.
the books, but I think there is going to be some sort of a, you know, the public is going to obviously jump in there and do something, you know, and say I like this person or I like that person, and you know, you have your social media, and I was gonna ask you, how has that helped your book sales? I'm sure enormously.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even though my book by a small publisher here in New York, you know, it doesn't matter, as my agent told me, it doesn't matter if it's HarperCollins or Magnus Books,
right.
you have to do all the work yourself because,
right. Right.
you know, it's they're laying people off right and left.
Right.
Your connections are better than anything they could do for you because you
exactly.
know people. I have friends in media, so I've gotten, you know, a few
right.
things written up here and there.
Correct.
And, you know, I have an audience already, which, like I
sure.
said, is sort of how the book started out. So
sure,
if I
sure.
didn't have that, the book would just be, you know,
for your
bad on arrival.
Oh, exactly. And I know Don at Magnus. I've met him a few times. We've had symposiums
yeah.
here. He's an amazing. He's kept so much together. In a storm of nastiness and all sorts of things when he was at Allison years ago and all that.
Yeah, that was a big shitstorm.
Yeah, all that craziness. Yeah, see, I get involved with all, I was involved with all that as when I was board chair of the Stonewall Library because it's the, you know it's kind of like a crown. I'm not with them anymore, but it's kind of a crown jewel stop on the book circuit tour because it's the only public gay library in the country where people can walk in and check and see 28,000 gay books sitting there in a room, you know, and you sit there in that
yeah,
room.
Yeah, I've written about it before on my blog. It is remarkable. I've never been, though.
Yeah, well, come on down. We've got a sofa bed. You can, yeah, but anyway, but what's amazing is that every so often, you know, we'll get an author in there, like Felice Picano or Edmund White. We've had them in the building, and they'll walk into the building, and they'll see people coming in and checking books out, and they're going to, you know, talk in a half an hour, and they go, oh, my fucking God. You know, and it's like, it is amazing to still see the books, you know, to see the actual books. But so I think there's going to be a resurgence in wanting the physical book again. So, of course, I read yours on a Kindle, you know.
Well, that's because I was too cheap to mail you a hard copy. So,
but I read them on Kindles anyway. I mean, I'm.
Oh, you do?
To,
okay.
At the gym, I hate to drive. My partner drives, so I sit in the car, and I'm one of these people, and I live on the beach, so I take it to the beach every day, and sit there. So, I mean, I'm one of those, the Kindle was a perfect vehicle for me because, A, I'm ADD, and two, I can carry, you know, one thing around with me and not five and not lose it. So, for me, it works great.
Yeah, and I like the idea of picturing you on the treadmill cracking up about Molly, so that's
yeah,
nice.
It was Molly. How did you know it was Molly? Because I have a Jewish mother, that's why, okay. She's almost, she's almost like a Jewish mother, but not quite. You know, on the edge, you know, she like fringes, you know, so it's funny. All right. So we're going to play make believe now. And this is the part of the show that if you've listened to some of my broadcasts, you know, what's coming or not. You're at a book signing and a young pimply faced, twinkie, charming young man comes up to you, asks you to sign the book and then says, I want to be just like you. How do I do it?
Well, I think anyone who knows me would strongly recommend that I deter anything close to that. You know, I would say I went to college and did internships at newspapers and, you know, really worked my way up. And I think, you know, just over time, I guess I consider myself a bit of a late bloomer now since I'm 46 writing my first book, and it was something that I really wanted to do since I was a very young boy. But, you know, it everything takes time, and I think everything just fell into place right for me. But I definitely had the skills and the experience once the opportunity came along to do it. So I would tell them to do the same. Work with good people, reach out to people, don't be shy about asking for mentoring and help. I've had great people in my life, many of whom I thank in the back of the book. And I think that's the key to success, surrounding yourself with good people.
But I also noticed you really have paid your dues. You've done a lot of writing, public writing, private writing. I mean, you obviously have an incredible observational and journalistic skills, you say they were honed. I mean, you actually said that you had mentorship and work, but I think you're right. I think saying to the person that you are going to have to pay your dues and do a lot of work, I don't think 46 is a late bloomer. I think you need to. I mean, I think people who write their memoirs at 25 are, you know, not really honest with themselves. I think you really need time to look back and reflection, and that's what your book does. In fact, I'm going to talk a little bit about the book to the listeners, and you can blush because it's radio. The book actually matures as Kenneth matures. It is a life story. It is chronological, and you can as you get into the chapters are short vignettes with very catchy and sometimes snarky titles. And as you get farther into the book, you realize the material gets more a little more mature. It gets a little more down to earth. It gets a little more reflective. And you realize that as the author is telling you his life story, the book is maturing as he is. And it's a fabulous story. It's called Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful? You can get it on Amazon.com and also through MagnusBooks.com. And we have 90 seconds left, and it's the fastest 30 minutes I've ever done. Kenneth, what would you like to say in closing?
Well, just thank you very much for having me on. I hope we reach some new people. And
sure you
will. Stop by my blog, Kenneth and the 212, and send me an email or you know, tell me what you think if you've read it.
Okay, great. It's Kenneth in the 212. 212 is 210. You can find him also as Kenneth M. Walsh on Facebook. Is that okay? You don't mind people contact you on Facebook like that? Okay, that's great.
That's fine. And there's a page for the book on Facebook too where you can like the book and write to me there too.
Love the book. Anyway, the book is called Wasn't Tomorrow Wonderful? The author is Kenneth M. Walsh, and I'm saying good night. And thank you, Kenneth, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Nate.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.